and a good new year straight ahead. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash.
And we're building bridges.
We're building the labor movement in the South is about workers building power through organization, says Saladin Muhammad, co-founder of the Southern Workers Assembly. So we'll head to Virginia and North Carolina to find out how the United Electrical Workers Union is making that a reality.
The UE, United Electrical Workers Union, is blazing new trails for the labor movement through the use of innovative and militant tactics to counter the continuing erosion of workers' rights. Plant occupations, strategic organizing strikes, the establishment of fully functioning pre-majority unions, and a use of civil disobedience to defend workers' rights. Well, now, Southern workers, they're with us to talk about the UE's broad region-wide organizing strategies. Organize the South campaign in the least organized region in the country, where new investment is concentrating and manufacturing is expanding in the context of their particular work sites. Ken, who are we joined by?
We're pleased to welcome labor activist Trina Love, a human service worker from Virginia Beach, Virginia. Nelson Johnson, a truck driver for Darling Ingredients in the largest of five plants in North Carolina. And Chris Hollis, UE organizer.
You know, I want to put this to Chris, but everybody can kind of fill in here. When I think of the South, I think of the incredible human rights campaign that really disciplined and informed the entire country and the North. The North very often in its arrogance as we looked at racism in the South and so on. But that's the evolution of the civil rights movement, of the voting rights movement. It broke the back of the Southernocracy, if you will. So how are we to understand, Chris, why it is so difficult to similarly organize there for workers' rights and to create union structures for workers to move ahead to represent their own interests when there's such a valiant democratic tradition that the South has given this country? And we, frankly, in the North, stand on the shoulders of so much of the organizing that went on in the South.
Just to answer your question really quick, the South is a beast of its own. We all know the historical landmarks that have been made with civil rights, voters' rights. A lot of battles have been fought in the South. And it's different like night and day to the North, in a sense, when it comes to even labor organizing. Because in North Carolina, as well as South Carolina, Virginia in 2020, collective bargaining became a law, right? So it was like the beginning of an end to Jim Crow, which is still prevalent in the South. North Carolina is still a human rights violation, not having collective bargaining. But workers are getting stuff done. They understand the whole methodology of organizing. And that is one thing that the UE takes pride in, is educating workers, leadership development, giving workers the consciousness to understand that they truly have the power, not the municipalities or not the private sector companies, but the workers themselves. Because without the workers, then there is no products being made, because there is no labor. When nobody's at work, the company loses money, right? And workers have to understand that they do have a sense of power. We don't lean on the law such as the NRLB, which is workers' protection rights, right, along with the Department of Labor. There's a lot of these organizations out there that support workers, but workers have to support themselves. You know, we have to be the change that we're looking for. And that is something that the UE constantly stresses, you know, to the working class. That in order for there to be a change, the change has to start within you. Organize your workplace. Build relationships. And this is something that, again, we're fighting against a Jim Crow mindset, a Southern depression, right, of a worker's rights to organize. Workers' rights are being violated every day in the South. You know, I want to say around the whole country. We just seen the railroad workers. Congress had to step in for that, right? But these workers are expressing every day their power to organize and be treated fairly, you know, earn a decent livable wage. I'm just so proud of Trina in Virginia Beach and Nelson in North Carolina, because the actions they have done as a collective body of workers have caused businesses, private sector businesses, to sell. They couldn't take the heat, get out the kitchen, right? In Virginia, these workers have engaged in a political process where they endorsed city council officials, which were very victorious, came November the 8th. And they built these relationships. Now they're trying to educate the municipality in Virginia Beach, the city council, what collective bargaining looks like. What does a resolution look like? And that's something that a lot of people cringe when they hear it, right? When you hear the word union, corporations cringe, because it is the beginning of change. And that's what work these workers are geared towards, change. And we look for a big change in 2023. I think that what's really important in the South is the mindset. We have to change the workers' mindset, because more times than often, a worker will quit their job instead of fighting against the intolerable working conditions that their supervisors or their bosses are putting on them. But when you're organized as a collective, when you're building these relationships with your coworkers, then you're having these conversations, and then you're well organized, and you build you a cadre, and workers understand their rights because they're becoming educated to know their rights, they stand on it, and it begins to empower them to be the change that they're looking for.
Well, Trina Love, you apparently are one of those people, along with Nelson Johnson, who are the change that we're looking for and you're looking for. So tell us about Trina Love. You are a human service worker from Virginia Beach, Virginia. What is that change that we're looking for? What's your story, and what brought you to that organizing sphere that Chris was talking about? And then certainly, Nelson, chirp in, tell us your story. And we're ahead from Virginia then to Fayetteville.
My name is Trina Love, and like you said, I'm in the Human Service Department. What brought me to the Southern Workers Justice was a change. Public workers need collective bargaining to have in a better working place. I give you an example. Me and my son was going for the same position, and this young lady came in to the Human Service Department for me to train, not knowing that I was training her for the job that I was applying for. So she became my supervisor. And to me, I felt like I was good enough to train her, but I wasn't good enough to have the job.
Oh, that's pretty infuriating.
Were there racial dimensions to this?
Yes. The young lady was white, and I'm black, and she hadn't been in the Human Service Department maybe 2 years, and I'd been in the Human Service Department for 13 years. So that was like a slap in the face.
What are some of the other things that feel like a slap in the face for a worker like yourself and your colleagues? I mean, 13 years, that's a long time. So tell us more about what the indignity and the economic deprivation as a city worker who makes the city work. What you've experienced, Trina?
I experienced where I worked for the city of Virginia Beach, but economically, I can't live in the city that I work for, where we don't make enough to even buy houses. Even living in apartments or condos, I have coworkers that work for the city, but they live in Portsmouth, Chesapeake, Hampton, because we can't afford to live in Virginia Beach.
What kind of wages are you making?
Right now, we went to the city council, and we just won a step plan for the workers. And now we're looking for, in the future, coming up, to talk to some of these councilmen into having collective bargaining.
What does the step system take you to? What's the first part of that step system? What would be a salary line when you're talking about not being able to live in the city that you work in? How much are you making now?
Now is $32,000.
Wow. That's ghastly. That's obscene. That's obscene. And just with that, could you just maybe say something about what the rents are or what the house prices are in Virginia Beach to give us a sense of why you can't, after 13 years on the job and making the city run, live in Virginia Beach? What are those rents approximately? What are those house prices?
Well, the rent has gone up from like $925 to $15.
Wow.
Because there's no cap on what the landlord or property manager can go up to. Mm. Houses, you know, now is not a good market to be buying houses.
My goodness.
Trina, I know you're getting a lot of community support, support in the churches, support from citizens' organizations. I know there's been demonstrations in support of your efforts. Can you talk about that?
Yes. We went to city council a couple of months ago, and we got where the Virginia law got changed in 2020, where we can go up and ask for collective bargaining and be able to organize as a union to get more, better pay, just better working conditions.
Hmm. You know, Trina, you make me think of the signs that were carried during the sanitation strike in Memphis, the last campaign that Martin Luther King went down for, and people were walking around with signs saying, "I am a man," because they were talking about dignity. And everything you've said is talking about dignity, the material conditions, the way you were, the racism that has been expressed to you, and so on. And is that similarly your experience, Nelson?
Yes, thank you for having me. I mean, I came to want to be involved in the union because the working conditions here in the South are not right. I mean, they think that they can work you as much as they want to. Like, I'm on a 70-hour clock because I'm a truck driver. They try to get every one of those hours every week, and we don't even get overtime.
Want to elaborate on that in terms of how that affects your wages, in terms of sick time, in terms of overtime, in terms of lost time because you're preparing for work and they're not paying for you? What's going on in that site?
Well, sick days, you get, they tell you two a year. But if you go to the doctor and come in with a doctor's note, they won't even accept it. They'll write you up for being out that day.
Wait a minute. Did I understand you, Nelson? Did you say two a year?
Yes, two a year.
My goodness. What an... I'm outraged. I'm sorry. Yes. Continue, but I couldn't
two
believe
a year.
It. Wow.
And like I told the other day, I was telling Ken, I got in an accident in my private vehicle. Then all of a sudden, I had 30 sick days before I could get my short-term disability from the job that I pay for on a weekly basis. And I was like, where did all these sick days come from? I was told we only get two a year. I was recently out of work for 2 weeks because of my DOT physical, and they demanded a doctor's note. But now my check stub shows all this sick time I got, but they wanted to use my vacation days as opposed to my sick days. And I told them, no, don't touch my vacation days. I said, if I can't get my sick days, I just won't get paid for it.
And what about health and safety on the job? I know there have been a number of people getting sick because of the air there. Describe what your job is. But also, there's also been two deaths recently. Talk about all of this. How does this all come together?
Well, I'm a truck driver for a rendering company. We pick up the stuff from these chicken processing plants and turkey processing plants. Anything they don't use, we haul it away. The blood, the feathers, the guts. We take it to our plant, and the smell is horrible. I mean, especially the blood, even in the wintertime, and we have to open the lids up once we get ready to back to our plant. But the workers that died, they with my maintenance, they went down in one of these pits that cooks this stuff down to fix something, and they were overcome by gases. That's because they wasn't wearing the CO detectors or whatever it is. They blame the death on the workers, but nobody was enforcing that they should wear those things anyway. But the day after, because that happened on a Sunday, when I got to work that Monday morning, everybody that worked inside the plant had one on, including the safety man who should have been making them wear them to start with. I don't even see how this guy got a job still. But like we used to say during our organizing, it was a criminal company under Valley Proteins. It's a criminal company under Darling Ingredients. Because since I've been there just a little over 9 years, there are three people that have died inside that plant while I've been there. One guy fell off the top of a trailer. He was trying to fix a raggedy tarp. One of the problems is our equipment. And because we on a load pay system, these guys will take these trailers with violations on them. I hooked up the one the other day that was loaded. I had to leave it at the processor because the brakes were no good on it. I'm not going to risk my life with it knowing that I got 40 tons, I got to stop, and the brakes on the trailer's not working. That's asking for trouble.
So are the workers banding together in a union? Are they confronting management about these things? And what is management saying or not doing?
Well, almost 3 years ago, we got a petition together, and we marched on the bosses. And we got some things done because they wasn't taking our temperature when we came in. This was at the height of COVID. They wasn't sanitizing anything, but they started sanitizing the trucks once a week. And the offices they was doing almost every day. And they started taking our temperatures when we came in for our shift. I mean, but now it's kind of a struggle because some of the guys, it's that, like Chris spoke on earlier, we got to change their attitudes because they all think if they name is seen on something, that they're going to get fired. Because North Carolina is a right-to-work state, but they just can't fire you for anything. But I've been trying to convince them, look, y'all done seen my name on things. I'm still working. They don't even bother me because I know I'm protected because even though we haven't gotten enough people to have an election, but I'm still there. Them people don't bother me about my union activities or nothing. And they know I'm on the committee.
But I'm interested, Nelson. What brought you to the idea that you needed a union And where does the resistance lie for all those workers in this crummy, awful, opportunist and exploitive conditions? Why aren't they automatically jumping on the bandwagon as well? I mean, so what brought you to the union, and why isn't everybody kind of on the bandwagon for union?
Well, see, my father and a lot of my uncles, they was part of the Great Migration. They moved to Buffalo, New York, when they used to have the General Motors plant. And all of those guys retired from there younger than I am now.
Mm.
And I'm 57. My father retired, he was like 45, 46. And I think the kind of money that they was getting on their pensions every month, even back then, was good money for now. But then after I got into the workforce and I see how these companies don't treat you like nothing, but you're just another number, they don't care about you. Because if you die, they gonna replace you the next day. I've seen it where I work at now. Those two guys that died in that pit, before the end of that week, they had replaced them.
Wow. Well, Trina, you know, I don't know if there are things that you want to talk to Nelson about. You can easily talk to each other and ask each other questions and so on. But in your sense, do you face opposition from other people in the workforce there also about, like, unionizing? Or what brings you to that process? Why is it so darn important for the workers to collectivize their energy? And how are you all doing that?
Yes, I have coworkers that they're scared to join the union because they're scared they're going to get fired or get backlash from supervisors. Where I decided I wanted a change, so that's what brought me to UE to get a change in the workforce, because it's time to stand up. If you don't stand up for yourself, who will?
So, go ahead. And we're talking with, I just want to let people know, we're talking with Trina Love, who is a public worker down in Virginia Beach, Virginia, and Nelson Johnson, who is with us from Fayetteville, who is a truck driver who works in a rendering plant with some really terrifying conditions. And, of course, they all are friends of and work with union organizer Chris Hollis. So, I'm sorry, Trina, you were saying.
It's just, like I said, you know, it's just time for a change. We had the sanitation department went into strike. And they went into white neighborhoods. And they went on a Wednesday. By Thursday, they got everything they wanted, because the city did not want to see them not pick up trash.
Brings back to thoughts the Memphis sanitation strike, which King gave his support. Going full circle. What do you think?
Yes, it did.
Let's go back to, you know, maybe Chris, maybe you can also take us and join Trina and Nelson together. This is a Southern strategy. It's Virginia Beach, it's Fayetteville. But what brings people together here? And then I want to hear how you're going to accomplish. And we only have less than about a minute left for each person, unfortunately. And we've got to get back and watch and talk more about these developing struggles. But maybe your each one of you, your final thoughts. Chris, and then back to Trina and Nelson. And thank you so much for joining us and for the spirit and the energy for unionizing.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much. My final thought, just really reflecting on this whole conversation, which is very important, understanding the history. And I feel that if we understand the history, then we can know our way forward. Martin Luther King, he was an activist. You know, he was a people's person. He was for the people. And when he went down for the missing sanitation strike, understand the two workers had already died because they were working with hazardous equipment, you know, and he went up there to help stand with them, you know, for them to organize and unionize, you know. So the struggle continues today. And I think that as we all can reflect on the sacrifices that have been made for each and every one of us who has a job, you know, that's something that's empowering, because we have to stand together. Corporations are worried about profit. Brother Nelson just said earlier, those seats were already filled the day after those workers died, because it's profit over human life. We have to have each other's back as workers. We have to unify. We have to stand in solidarity against each violation that a worker can come up with. Education is vital. We definitely have to educate each other, you know, with labor, with labor laws. Understand your rights. Read your company policies, you know, because by law, they have to put some of these labor rights in your policies. A lot of people don't worry about it. They want to see that direct deposit form filled out, right? But it's very important that workers educate one another, build relationships with each other, hold these conversations, because 9 times out of 10, you're going to spend more time with your coworker in a year than you will with your own family.
Well,
so that,
you know,
becomes your extended family.
I hate to cut this off, but this is not the end. This is the beginning. And I want to make sure that we get Trina Love and we get Nelson Johnson and Chris Hollis back, and maybe with a few other workers, and we'll spend the whole hour talking about how these things are really unfolding in Fayetteville, North Carolina, how they're unfolding in Virginia Beach, Virginia, and throughout the South. And kudos to the UE for their creative and militant labor organizing.
This has been Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. Educate, agitate, and organize for the empowerment of we the people, for another world is possible.